Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Trumpet sounds can only mean one thing. It's another edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen here on a Thursday, filling in solo for Melody Cedarstrom, who's taking care of other business today. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic news of the day for Thursday, May 4, 2023. Happy National May the 4th Be With You Today. Only Star Wars fans out there like me will truly appreciate the importance of this day. On another personally sentimental note, on this day in 1970, four students were gunned down by National Guardsmen at Kent State University while protesting. We remember those men and women, as well as all the servicemen and women who served in and were killed in that brutal war. We wonder what kinds of contributions each of them would have made to their communities and the world had they not been the victims of a very mixed up governor in one case and, well, misguided presidents, I'm afraid, in the other. Let's get started with today's crazy market report. While down from its all-time high and from its intraday high, gold holding on to solid gains, seeing a little reaction today as the ECB raised interest rates by 25 basis points. We'll talk a little bit about that later in the first segment. Gold up roughly $10 right now in the New York spot aftermarket at $2,050, about a 0.5% increase off its high of about $2,061. Good news, we're still heading in the right direction. Silver, 1.7% rise today to $26.12. Platinum down a little over percent, 1,052. And palladium up a little over 2% at $1,525. Now, the dollar, the U.S. dollar today, up a tad, I think 7 tenths of a basis point, 101.41. In the other commodity markets, oil down about, what's that, 11 cents at 68.49. Natural gas down about 0.82 cents at $2. And we'll call it 9 cents. Unit. We've got... what of a split day in the Treasury market. 10-year yield down about 4 basis points, 3.36 plus percent. 2-year yield, 3.77%. The 3-month, 5.25%. Still signifying that with that inverted yield curve, a coming recession. And in the markets, all the major indexes of the U.S. down today at the close. Dow Jones about 286, had been down, all of them had been down further earlier today, 33,128 roughly. NASDAQ down 11,966 at 9's figure, down about 59 points today. The broader S&P 500 down, we'll call it 30, at 4,061. And that, ladies and gentlemen, about does it for today's market report, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Next up, PacWest. Yes, the rout in regional banks picked up steam again today. This morning, in fact, with several bank stocks suffering sizable losses. PacWest sank 50% in early trading and has actually halted at a point because of volatility. The slide started last evening after hours following news that the LA-based bank was exploring strategic options, including a potential sale. The bank said it would continue to evaluate all options to maximize shareholder value. I call that an uh-oh, which means I believe could be heading in the same direction as First Republic Bank. At the same time, Tennessee-based First Horizon also fell 38% after the regional lender and TD Bank announced that they were giving up their merger agreement. The banks jointly said that the move was due to uncertainty around when TD would approve regulatory approval for the deal, perhaps if, and was not related to First Horizon. Shares of First Horizon were under pressure after the lender's merger was called off. Other notable declines in the banking industry include a drop of more than 18% for Western Alliance and about 7% for Zions Bancorp. And the SPDR S&P Regional Banking ETF, known as KRE, was down 5.3%. Now, today's moves come less after First Republic was seized by the FDIC and sold at a fairly significant discount to the U.S.'s largest bank and five-time felon, J.P. Morgan Chase, marking the third failure of a regional bank since early March. In this case, I believe the second largest in history. First Republic had searched for weeks for a market solution to stabilize itself after massive near $100 billion deposit withdrawals in the first quarter, but none materialized, and of course, regulators stepped in. Many regional banks saw flows in March around the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, raising questions at that time about the stability of their funding and the value of some assets on their books that were not marked to market. Tisk. Expected regulatory changes in the future also clouded the long-term profit outlook for this group. Of course, J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon is Chair Jerome Powell separately expressed optimism that the initial wave of bank failures has passed. But these drops for the stock show that investors, anyway, still lack confidence. Now, speaking of Jay Powell, the Federal Reserve reinforced its fight against high inflation yesterday, as Melody and Butch talked about, by raising its key interest rate by a quarter point to the now the highest level in 16 years. But Powell also signaled that it may now pause its streak of 10 rate hikes, which have made borrowing from consumers and businesses steadily more expensive. In a statement released after its latest policy meeting, the Fed removed the sentence from its previous official statement that had said some additional rate hikes might be needed. It replaced that with language that said it will now weigh a range of factors in determining the extent to which future hikes might be needed. Subtle, but very suggestive. Speaking at his news conference afterward, Powell said the Fed has yet to decide whether to suspend its rate hikes, but he pointed to the change in the statement's language as confirming at least that possibility. He asked whether the Fed's key rate was now high enough to restrain the economy and curb inflation. Powell said, "We may not be far off or possibly even at that level." Interesting. Economist Jim Nangy suggested that with lending conditions rapidly tightening in the wake of all the bank stresses, we, his company ING, think this will mark the peak for interest rates. Staying with this subject, the ECB, the European Central Bank, increased its benchmark rate by another 25 basis points today. Continues to fight a surge in consumer prices in the Eurozone, with rates now at levels not seen in, 15 years, November 2008. In a statement, the ECB said the inflation outlook continues to be too high for too long. So with this latest announcement, the bank's benchmark rate will move 3.25% as of next Wednesday, the 10th. Decision comes after inflation figures released earlier this week showed an increase in the Eurozone's headline rate to 7% in April. But let's see. The ECB said that headline inflation had declined over recent months, but underlying price pressures remain strong. The ECB embarked on its current hiking path couple months after the U.S., July 2022, when it brought its main rate up from, negative 0.5% to zero. However, despite consistent increases since then, inflation remains above the ECB target, like the Fed's in the U.S., 2%. And estimates published last week by the IMF suggest that inflation will not reach the ECB's target until 2025. Now, the ECB also didn't provide further guidance about upcoming rate decisions, but it did say it would likely stop reinvestments under its asset purchase program in July. APP is a bond-buying stimulus package, which started in mid-2014 to deal with persistently low inflation levels. It was frozen between January and October 2019 and then lasted until July last year, but continued to reinvest payments from the assets that had matured. Signaling that it would stop these reinvestments was seen as a hawkish compromise for the ECB this week, as some members of its governing council would likely have called for a larger hike. Christine Lagarde, who's the ECB prez, said, "I think it's fair to say that everybody agreed that increasing the rate was necessary, and that second, we are not pausing. That is very clear. We know we have more ground to cover. Back here in the States, it's another jobless claims Thursday. The number of Americans applying for unemployment benefits across the country jumped last week, but are said to remain low over, even as the Fed has furiously, if not obsessively, raised interest rates to beat down inflation and cool the job market. Labor Department reported this morning that applications for jobless claims for the week ending April 29th rose by 13,000 to 242,000 from the 229K the previous week. Again, the weekly claims numbers are considered a proxy for initial layoffs. The four-week move average of claims, which flattened some of the week-to-week volatility, rose by 3,500 to 239,250. Overall, 1.81 million people were collecting unemployment benefits the week ending April 22nd. It's about 38,000 fewer than the previous week. And workers are enjoying unusual job security despite rising interest rates as economic uncertainty, along with economic uncertainty and fears of a looming recession. Employers added 236,000 jobs in March, down from 472 in January and 326 in February, but still relatively strong by historic standards. Another sign that the labor market might be cooling came Tuesday when the government reported that jobs fell in March to their lowest level in nearly 2 years. So now there are about 1.6 job openings for worker, not the, I think it was as high as 2.0 or even 2.1. Other government jobs report, consensus now is that we'll have added 180,000 jobs last month compared to other recent months. That's a relatively lower figure, but of course the proof will be in the pudding when it comes out. In the morning, Fed, of course, hoping to achieve that so-called soft landing, lowering growth just enough to bring inflation under control without causing the herd. Most economists are skeptical of that. Many expect us to enter a recession sometime this year, particularly with the economy slowing sharply in the first quarter to 1.1% on an annual basis. There's been an increasing number of layoffs in recent months, mostly in the tech sector, again, where companies furiously added jobs during the pandemic. But it's not just the tech sector that's trimming staff. McDonald's, too big to fail, Morgan Stanley, and Minnesota's 3M also announced significant layoffs. And last, this segment, domestic oil prices fell 4% yesterday, less than $69 a barrel, and again down, albeit less today. And what seems to be a growing concern about the outlook for global growth in that futures market. And as we well know, oil is a key input into the world economy. And big price moves for crude can signal a shift in investor expectations. So many are saying now the downturn in oil prices could mean they expect the economy to further weaken. Basically, investors think China's recovery from its disastrous zero COVID policies has been pretty lackluster. At the same time, they think banking jitters could crimp U.S. growth going forward the rest of this year. Bottom line, sell-off in crude's consistent with other evidence that the global industrial economy, or the goods-producing part anyway, of the world is suffering. That might not be the end of the world. Speaking of our economy, it does continue to shift away from buying and selling goods, which was big during and after the pandemic, and back towards services, traditionally the driver of the modern U.S. economy. Focusing on the slowdown in manufacturing or falling commodity prices like crude oil may obscure the importance of the overall service sector, and some say could give a false impression of how the economy is doing overall. Well, we'll talk more about this topic and more when we get back from our break. Please listen to these important messages. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody in the office at 1-800-375-4188, or look us up on the web at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. While you're there, sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs. Let's see where to go to next. You know, here's a short but sweet news item, and we'll do a brief segment. Let's call it Brevity is Golden, a temporary reprieve from our weekly Levity is Golden. At a certain tier of restaurants, the bread has been good for decades, but now it's emerged as a course of its own. Go capitalism. Looks like restaurants are ditching the free bread basket in favor of the fancier, pricier bread course. Welcome to the new normal. Restaurant Nora in Brooklyn does buttery naan, while Dauphine's in D.C. offers thickly sliced sweet potato brioche. Eateries all over the country are beginning to sell curated assortments of loaves and dips for double-digit prices. Nora's, for example, costs $21. Nora's pastry chef, Sam Short, said that customers ask him, $21 for a bread basket? But it's always followed by, it was totally worth it. Michael Werrell, the pastry chef at Audrey in Nashville, says it's almost like a bread revival. And chef and restaurateur Greg Backstrom, whose Rockefeller Center restaurant called 5 Acres says, yes, flour is cheap. He serves a laminated carrot curry milk bread accompanied by a copper ring of fresh pea butter for $14, but adds labor is expensive. And bread, he adds, is so much labor. At Havanmar, the head baker Farheen Jaffrey starts her day at around 7 a.m. working alone 6 days a week. She said, it's just three breads, but huge quantities. I call it the dread basket. It's also physically taxing. Ms. Short quipped, I joke with my assistant all the time that we're going to get T-shirts that say, body by bread. And this article continues, Americans fresh off the pandemic era sourdough craze have discovered a newfound appreciation for bread. We certainly live in interesting times. Levity is golden. Back on a more serious note, I guess, Russia has been accused today of staging an alleged drone attack on the Kremlin that it blamed on Ukraine. Analysts saying it's likely Moscow carried out the incident itself. Ukraine denied any involvement that purportedly involved two drones, saying it more likely signaled that Russia was planning a large-scale terrorist attack against Ukraine in the coming days. Another false flag operation. White House also denied any involvement in the U.S., with National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby saying this morning the U.S. did not encourage nor enable Ukraine to strike outside its borders. He said, we certainly don't dictate to them the terms by which they defend themselves or the operations they can conduct. Now, during a recent visit to the Netherlands, Ukraine President Vladimir Zelensky said that Vladimir Putin must be brought to justice for the war in Ukraine, calling for the creation of a war crimes tribunal separate from the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Russia's former president and prime minister, Dmitry Medvedev, called for the physical elimination of Zelensky following a drone attack on the Kremlin. Medvedev, now deputy chair of Russia's Security Council, said there are no options left except for the physical elimination of Zelensky and his clique. Medvedev, who regularly issues nuclear threats against Ukraine, accused Kyiv of attempting to assassinate Putin. The U.S. says it's unable to validate the Russian accusation. Back here in the States in financial news, as Apple reported quarterly earnings today, the results were expected to be somewhat muted. Company already guided investors to a 5% revenue decline because of decreases in Mac and iPad sales for the most part. But Apple still will still remind investors of its mammoth size and overall market power as the company uses its second quarter report to tell investors how much its board has authorized it to spend on share buybacks and, yes, dividends. It's another way of telling the world how profitable its business is and how much cash it throws off every quarter. Wall Street expects that number now to come in at $90 billion for the quarter, equal to last year's authorization figure, based on a compilation of reports from analysts. The iPhone maker has been the buyback king over the past decade. From 2012 through the end of 2022, for example, Apple has spent over $572 billion on share repurchases, most of any company, according to FactSet. Since 2013, Apple's announced board authorization levels in its second quarter earnings report. Second to Apple in the buyback realm is its rival Alphabet, parent company of Google, with 178 plus billion in share repurchases over the decade. The Google parent just said its board authorized a $70 billion buyback for the year. And analysts at Too Big to Fail Bank of America said the other day that capital returns are a focus of their report today. They, too, expect $90 billion in authorization, and Too Big to Fail Barclays anticipate the same figure. But some are asking, how long Can Apple maintain this pace? Barclays said in its report, we expect Apple to continue to work toward being net cash neutral sometime in the future. Net cash neutral, a phrase that Apple finance chief Luca Maestri uses when asked about buybacks, refers to a point where the company's cash pile is about equal to its debt. At that time, he says, Bork could decide to slow the pace of its capital return. Apple's actually currently working off a pile of cash that ballooned to $269 billion, which is its high point over the past decade. Company says it now has $165 billion in cash and $111 billion in debt for $54 billion in net cash, or its lowest position in years. Now, listeners know that Melody and I hate stock buybacks, which artificially inflate a company's stock price and which are in lieu of more productive activities like companies' capital expenditures, research and development, employee development and compensation, and so forth. Before Apple's announcements as of early February this year, all companies had announced close to $174 billion worth of planned buybacks this year, just over double last year's pace. That's according to EPFR trim tabs. However, fewer companies have announced buybacks so far this year. In 2023, 78 companies have announced buybacks compared with 125 as of the same time last year. In 2022, buyback announcements reached a total record $1.22 trillion. And Shopify announced today it's cutting 20% of its workforce. That news came as it reported first quarter earnings that actually beat analyst estimates on both the top and bottom lines. Shares of Shopify surged as much as 24% early this morning. CEO Toby Lütke announced the job cuts in a memo to employees posted to the company's website, of course not specifying which units would be affected as a result of the layoffs. He added, I recognize the crushing impact this decision has on some of you and did not make this decision lightly. Shopify has about 11,600 employees and contractors as of 12/31, according to a securities filing. Now, the cuts mark the second round of layoffs for this popular Canadian e-commerce company. Last July, the company laid off 10% of its workforce after Lütke said he had misjudged how long the pandemic-fueled e-commerce boom would last. And he adds that now the company is slipping down as it focuses on its core business, which is making tools for companies that sell products, yes, online. Well, I'm not sure where that's going to leave the company. He called their effort a worthwhile side quest in terms of other systems that it's selling. But he said they're going to focus on newer initiatives, such as, you ready for this, drum roll please, artificial intelligence. So we know what's going to happen to most, not the vast majority of those employees that are being laid off. They're going to have to look for jobs elsewhere. Let's get back to what happened yesterday. That is a post-meeting press conference after the Federal Open Market Committee raised the Fed's benchmark interest rate another 25 basis points. Fed Chair Jerome Powell said, we shouldn't even be talking about a world in which the U.S. doesn't pay its bills. It just shouldn't be a thing. Well, but it is. Today, fine Senate Republicans deeply skeptical of Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen's updated estimate that the U.S., the federal government, won't be able to pay its bills as early as June 1st. That's less than 4 weeks if Congress doesn't raise the debt ceiling. Now, firm deadline can sometimes be a forcing mechanism in negotiations, especially on Capitol Hill, but deadlines only work if all the parties actually believe they're real. The true day of reckoning could land somewhere in July or even August, according to some GOP members of Congress. Of course, that timeline allows them to maintain their current position, which is to call for direct negotiations between President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, and to dismiss any talk of potential release valves, such as a 1, 2, or 3 month extension of the limit. House now out of session, Senate Republicans are lining up behind McCarthy and his plan to combine budget cuts with raising the debt ceiling, touting their unity while testing Biden's resolve not to negotiate unless the debt ceiling is increased first. On this past Monday, Yellen told McCarthy that our best estimate is that we will be unable to continue to satisfy all the government's obligations by early June, potentially as early as June 1. But Republicans appear to be focusing more on the next sentence that came after that, where Yellen's deadline, quote, could be a number of weeks later than these estimates. Senate Minority Whip Republican John Thune responded, hard deadlines do make a difference because there's a sense of urgency around them, but I think the impression here is that there's probably still some flexibility there. On the other side, Senator Michael Bennett of Colorado said, it's kind of funny how everybody becomes an economist in moments. Powell, for his part, said that raising the debt ceiling in a timely manner is essential. Failures to do so would put the economy, in his words, into uncharted territory, and added, no one should assume that the Fed can really protect the economy and the financial system and our reputation globally, that such an event might inflict. When will they learn, ladies and gentlemen? Perhaps when we, the voters, stand up and make them pay attention. Well, we've had a hard problem doing that to date. I don't expect it to get any easier. Well, here's an interesting development, especially if you travel. Airbnb is rolling out a series of new features this week meant to improve affordability and price transparency. More importantly, though, and to stop you from booking hotels. Airbnb took off years ago because, well, largely because its offerings were often cheaper than hotel rooms. I've got to confess that we used a competitor of Airbnb for family vacation. For that very reason, significantly cheaper. But prices are beginning to increase. And hosts, Airbnb hosts, increasingly make their guests clean up after themselves when their stay is over, which also has helped swing the pendulum back a little bit in hotels' favor. The highlight of Airbnb's new update is Airbnb Rooms. Excuse me, it's a new category showing individual rooms in a host's home. The offering goes back to the company's roots at a time when people are trying to save money where they can while traveling. That's according to Airbnb's global head of policy and communications, Jay Carney. Airbnb will reportedly now show the total price for a given stay directly in the search results, rather than keeping certain fees hitting until the booking page. That's good. I'm going to say on this recent trip, the posted prices on the internet of the company we used did not show the 7 or 8 different levels of taxes and fees that would be applied to our weekly rental. Many of these tweaks Carney says our direct response is to push back against these so-called departure chores and other complaints, adding it's answering the mail we got, basically. We're responding to the concerns, the feedback we've seen. Now, ironically, Airbnb, Vrbo, and other booking online booking companies just aren't going head-to-head with big corporate hotels. They're also driving small private bed and breakfast owners like my friends Dave and Dave literally out of business. So let's be careful what we ask for. Hey, we'll stop there and be back after another short break. Again, if you didn't know, you're listening to Financial Survival. Don't say
since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. Dave Allen here. Melody's in the office taking care of other client business. You know how you can reach her. 1-800-375-4188 for all your physical gold and silver needs. Listeners might recall that last week Melody and I reported on a news story about home buyers with good credit scores paying more for mortgages in order to subsidize those with lower credit scores. Well, turns out that's not so true, at least according to a new report by Emily Peck today at Axios. The fee structure around mortgages, she writes, that are set by housing regulators did change this year, but authorities told her to rest assured that those with good credit scores still pay less than those with worse ones. Well, here's what apparently happened. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's regulators at the Federal Housing Finance Agency changed the fees they charge on mortgages. Fannie and Freddie buy up about half of all single-family mortgages in the U.S., keeping the housing market working best as it can. The fees at issue are charged in exchange for taking on the credit risk of these mortgage loans. That is, higher risk equals higher fees. Risk is determined by credit score and down payment size relative to home value, largely. The average fee was 0.56, about half a percentage point in 2021 anyway. Last year, the FHFA announced increased fees on second home loans, high balance loans, cash out refinances, and investor property loans, all of which aren't really core to that agency's mission. Now, later last year, with the help of the higher fees on non-mission critical loans, they eliminated fees for certain first-time borrowers, including lower-income borrowers and those in underserved communities, like folks in rural housing and manufactured housing and what have you. These borrowers still need high credit ratings, though, to secure their mortgages. As of the start of 2023, the FHFA announced changes to the overall fee pricing structure based on credit ratings and down payment amounts. Under the new structure, borrowers with better credit and higher down payments still pay lower fees. A recent Urban Institute analysis shows this. By taking into account both the new fee structure and the extra points tacked on to borrowers with smaller down payments. Lenders started using the new fee structure after the announcement and ahead of the May 1st deadline for when the agencies would start purchasing loans with the new pricing. And then, of course, media coverage about it heated up in April. And with the misinformation swirling, even industry insiders who oppose the new structure have made statements to debunk these reports. Mortgage Bankers Association spokesperson Adam DeSantis, for example, said borrowers with higher credit scores will still pay less than those with a lower credit score and the same down payment. Mickey Shimi, a principal advisor at the FHFA, added that none of the charges are about penalizing borrowers with good credit scores to subsidize borrowers with bad credit scores. And in a letter, Pat McHenry, who's the Republican chair of the House Financial Services Committee, called on FHFA Director Sandra Thompson to reverse the new fees. She responded with a detailed statement the same day that debunking the claim circulating, some included the suggestion you should deliberately try to lower your credit score to get a better mortgage rate. Well, Captain Obvious responds with this cautionary statement, just don't do that. No one paid much attention to Fannie and Freddie when mortgage rates were low. Now that the rate down the 30-year anyway is over 6%, the spotlight is on. Now, next, credit where credit is due, right? Well, in the same vein, criticism where it's due, too. In that respect, please don't kill the messenger, okay? We're learning today that billionaire donor Harlan Crow for several years paid the pricey private school tuition of a great nephew of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. Thomas had custody of the boy at that time, but according to the ProPublica report, he never disclosed in official filings that Crow was paying the tuition. That's even though he discussed another much less generous payment of $5,000 for a fraction of Martin's tuition, that's the great nephew, by another friend. ProPublica report, quote, ethics law experts told ProPublica they believe Thomas was required by law to disclose the tuition payments because they appear to be a gift to him. The same news outlet recently revealed how Crow paid for luxurious vacation trips over more than 20 years for Thomas and his wife, Ginny, without the Justice Report reporting those gifts on the annual financial disclosures. ProPublica also exposed that a Crow company bought properties in Savannah, Georgia, owned by the Thomas's family, including a home where the justice's mother still lives rent-free. Thomas likewise had never disclosed before the outlet's reporting either the trips gifted by the Texas real estate developer or the fact that Crow bought the properties. Now, that failure by Thomas to do so has led to growing calls, including by some members of Congress, for ethics reform at the Supreme Court, which, unlike lower federal courts, doesn't have a mandatory code of ethics for its members. Unbelievable. Talk about leading by example. Thomas took legal custody of the great-nephew and became his legal guardian around January 1998, the report said. He lived with Thomas and his wife from the age of 6 to 19. Now, the tuition at one of these two institutions that he attended, a boarding school in Georgia, was more than $6,000 per month. Martin apparently attended there his junior year of high school and spent the rest of his high school years at a military boarding school in Virginia, which Crow himself had attended, which charged between $25,000 and $30,000 annually. Crow was reportedly paying for the tuition at Randolph-Macon Academy as well. In a statement, Crow's office said, Harlan Crow has long been passionate about the importance of quality education and giving back to those less fortunate, especially at-risk youth. The statement added that Crow and his wife, Kathy, have supported many young Americans through scholarship and other programs at a variety of schools, including his alma mater. And one attorney argued that Thomas was not legally obligated to disclose the tuition payments as a gift from Crow because the Ethics in Government Act doesn't include a great-nephew under its definition of dependent child, but instead limits that to son, daughter, stepson, or stepdaughter. But Mark Bennett, a former federal judge, responded, "You can't be having secret financial arrangements." Richard Painter, who served as chief White House ethics lawyer under President George W. Bush, called Thomas's failure to disclose the tuition and other gifts from Crow way outside the norm. Again, we're looking for people to lead by example. So I don't think we're getting it in this case. Now, for decades, the U.S. Focused on trying to scare people away from drugs with the war on drugs, and it's just say no type brandings, instituting tough criminal penalties and emphasizing law enforcement over addiction treatment. But it looks like a major change is finally underway. Now, the old approach failed to prevent an overdose crisis that now kills more than 100,000 Americans a year. It appears policymakers have finally awakened to the urgency of the problem and have shifted resources, namely funding, toward treatment. While criminal penalties for drugs remain in many states, led both by Democrats and Republicans, have lessened them. Lawmakers now often discuss drugs as a problem of public health, not just criminal justice. Some lawmakers have even embraced a once radical strategy called harm reduction. That approach focuses on reducing the potential dangers of drugs, not necessarily encouraging users to abstain. The Republican-controlled Texas House voted last month for a bill that would decriminalize test strips to check drugs for fentanyl, the potent opioid that's often mixed into heroin, pills, and other drugs. Republican strongholds like Kentucky, Utah, and Mississippi, in fact, recently decriminalized the test strips. Now, Regina LaBelle, who leads the White House's Office of National Drug Control Policy under Biden, says the country's undergone a decided shift in favor of harm reduction. In 2015, she noted, Congress lifted a funding ban for needle exchanges where clean syringes are distributed to keep people from reusing or sharing potentially infected devices. And in March this year, the FDA for the first time made naloxone, Narcan, as it's known in the streets, a medication that reverses opioid overdoses available over the counter. So what's changed? Well, first, lawmakers grew desperate to reduce overdose deaths. Became a big political issue. And for the first time in 2021, surpassed that 100,000 mark. Now, old ideas like harsh criminal penalties clearly weren't working. So lawmakers turned to alternatives they once dismissed, essentially seeking any kind of solution. Well, second, the overdose crisis is now so widespread that many more people, including members of Congress, know someone hurt by it. And third, the role of race and class. Previous drug crises disproportionately hurt marginalized populations, such as black people during the 1980 crack epidemic, for example, and poor white people during the 1990s, early 2000s meth epidemic. White wealthy people had little exposure to these problems, or at least published exposure. Well, now they do. And the current overdose crisis has more directly hit white people of all classes, including lawmakers. And as uncomfortable as it may be that policymakers can be more apt to act and do so compassionately when a problem personally affects them, well, it's often true. But harm reduction is still far from gaining universal acceptance. Many lawmakers of both parties reject more controversial ideas like the supervised ejection sites. Still notable movement, though, however uneven. 3 years ago, fentanyl test strips were outlawed in 33 states. Today, they're legal, or soon will be, in at least 37. One final thought on yesterday's interest rate hike by the Fed. This one comes from Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal, who I like to quote on this program. Joe relates in his column today that the third sentence in yesterday's FOMC statement, where it announced the 25 basis point increase, was the U.S. banking system is sound and resilient. Really? But a few hours after that press relief, we saw PacWest Bank was exploring strategic options, including a sale. PacWest shares were already down roughly 80% since February, and then after that news hit, the stock was cut in half again. Today's not any better. I mean, Wiesenthal notes overall the banking system may be sound and resilient, but there's clearly anxiety surrounding certain individual banks that hasn't gone away. Anyway, he then points to the fourth sentence of the Fed's press release. It says, tighter credit conditions for households and businesses are likely to weigh on economic activity, hiring, and inflation. And this, he says, gets to the big macro takeaway, that inflation is still hot, but it's clearly a live possibility that the Fed has gotten to the end of its current hiking cycle. Well, we'll see where that leads. Powell stated no hike or pause at the next meeting's a real possibility, being encouraged by the trajectory of the labor market. Time will tell. They meet again in mid-June. The uncertain plot continues to thicken. And that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday, which will join Melody tomorrow to close out the week. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Happy Cinco de Mayo tomorrow. And may the 4th be with you. Bye-bye.